One man, perhaps more than any other, is credited with putting Atlanta classical music on the map, and that is Robert Shaw. He directed the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra for over two decades. In the month leading up to what would have been his 100th birthday, we're going to be celebrating Shaw and his contributions to Atlanta, to classical music, and to the lives of those he worked with over the years. And as an interviewer for the Atlanta Symphony broadcasts, that includes me too. To open up our Shaw retrospective, our producer Mike Johns insisted on turning the microphones on me for a conversation about who Robert Shaw was and what he meant to the city of Atlanta.
So for here in Atlanta, Robert Shaw was the music director of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. When he stepped into the role in 1967, can you talk about where the ASO was then and what kind of organization it was when he stepped out of the role in 88?
It was not a full-time orchestra. Didn't mean there weren't musicians of professional caliber and who were extraordinary. By the time he retired in 1988, I think it's fair to say they were certainly among the top 20 orchestras in the country, maybe in the top 10. And the chorus, simply mind-boggling, because these are volunteers. No one was paid a dime. But no one could be more serious about the role. And boy, he honed in on that. There was very little tolerance for missing rehearsals. Calling it a volunteer chorus somehow implies amateurs. Many of the people in the chorus were music professionals. Some traveled from other states to come here to rehearse with him.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, they wanted to observe and experience his rehearsal technique so they could in turn take back what they learned and apply to their groups.
Tell me about his methods, because this is, in speaking to people who have sung under him, people who learned from him, that's one of the main things that I've taken away, is that he had a really extraordinary grasp of how to conduct a chorus.
Well, he once said that, I love qualities of tempo so much.
I love qualities of tempo so much. Tempo is sort of my first association, and rhythm is my first, my closest personal association I feel with music. And
my predecessor here at WABE and my mentor, Jonathan Phelps, once compared Robert Shaw's sense of rhythm and tempo to perfect pitch. For those who have perfect pitch, you just know. And much of his rehearsal technique with the chorus was repetition of rhythmic patterns and sounds associated with them. So I think that the rhythm was sort of the gateway for getting the music, just getting it in your system. After achieving that precision, he went to work on the meaning. I continue to be astonished listening to his recordings by how a couple hundred voices sound like one. He achieved this with all sorts of interesting techniques that have to do with vowels, you know. The man had an ear, obviously. I don't think any other symphonic chorus was ever elevated to the level of prestige that ours is, alongside the orchestra, which isn't to say the Chicago Symphony Orchestra chorus isn't marvelous.
They do all right.
They do all right, and they've had their tradition, as has Boston. But here was Shaw bringing his particular voice, if you will, his milieu, his passion to the symphonic concert hall and saying, having this repertoire is an important part of a symphony orchestra's subscription series. And I think for the orchestral musicians, it was also a broadening of repertoire.
Mm-hmm. Because these are pieces that wouldn't otherwise be performed very often.
Well, they were performed, but not with the regularity mm-hmm. or in the multitudes that they were presented here. Part of what is so extraordinary about Robert Shaw is that he really had no formal training in music.
Really?
Yeah. He joined the Glee Club when he was at Pomona College studying religion and philosophy, and it just so happened the prominent choral conductor of the time, this was mainly popular choral music, was Fred Waring. He was also a celebrity, kind of a personality. He had a radio show. Hmm. And he heard one of the concerts with Robert Shaw conducting, and he said, I think there's something extraordinary here. And invited him to New York to work for him.
About what time? When would this have been?
So this would have been probably in the mid to late 30s.
Wow.
Yeah. If there was a characteristic that comes to mind, was that he was unpretentious, deeply intellectual, in the most genuine and non-judgmental way. He simply had this astonishing intellect. And though he rejected the organized religion he was brought up with, he was always pondering the spiritual. He once said, for me at least, the arts may provide the day-by-day confirmation of a creator's hand still at work in the lives and affairs of men.
Music is a sacrament. There's something holy about that. And music, when it's right, is that.
From the moment he arrived, he was determined to continue being a force for social justice. You know, 1967, we're talking just 3 years after the Voting Rights Act. And here's a man who, when he was touring with his chorale in the 1940s and 50s, and he had African-American singers in the choir. If there was a hotel that wouldn't accommodate everyone, they wouldn't stay in that. They certainly wouldn't stay in the hotel without the entire group. And similarly, when he was on tour with them, he insisted that tickets not only be available to everyone, but the best seats, We're not talking about, okay, African Americans are permitted, but they have to sit in the balcony, as was the case, sadly, with so many venues. But this inclusiveness, I think, was a no-brainer for him. And I think it's emblematic of the way he approached sacred texts. He was bringing people together in the concert hall through this music to transcend whatever they were experiencing. And when he brought the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and the ASO Chorus to Europe in 1988, an historic concert in East Berlin, this was when, I mean, this was a year, perhaps a year and a half before the wall came down. Wow. He conducted the Beethoven Ninth. Germans know their Beethoven Ninth. This was something different. People were weeping. And it was his open gift to all of the people of Germany, I think.
The Robert Shaw that you knew, what was he like?
I was very young when I met him. I was just starting, really, in my career. Well, I had only been established in my career for a few years, and...
About when would this have been?
I first began interviewing in 1983 for the Atlanta Symphony broadcasts with Mr. Shaw. I heard how tough he could be. And I knew I couldn't come across like some dilettante, much less an amateur. So I read and studied and listened a good bit. And we would go to his home where he was just surrounded by scores and Grammys and overlooked this beautiful leafy view. And when I walked in the first time and I said, "It's such a privilege to meet you." And he said, "You sing?" And I said, "Well, I mean, I like to sing. I'm not a singer." And he said, "What do you do Monday nights?" "We need altos." You know, I guess he heard a low voice and thought, And at that point I had a baby. So Monday nights and my husband occasionally teaching evenings, this was not possible, but I felt very flattered. He was intensely private, and he certainly had wonderful friends, loyal friends, and he was a devoted friend. But he didn't care for the superficiality of a lot of the kind of socializing that we associate with a glamorous performer's career. So I was privileged to see him often in a very contemplative setting, and when he was relaxed enough to indulge in some humor. We'll be hearing much more on Robert Shaw in the month to come from colleagues, singers, and other experts. And we're partnering with artsatl.com and the Atlanta Symphony to bring these stories to you. All of this leads up to the symphony's performance with the ASO Chorus at Carnegie Hall on April 30th, which would have been Robert Shaw's 100th birthday. Of course, You'll be able to find more at wabe.org/Shaw.